Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Is episodes once a week not enough for you, or are you looking for more technical information from the Mixing Music Podcast? Well, guess what? Now you can. You can subscribe to our exclusive content and triple the amount of episodes that you get access to. That's right. Instead of the free once a week episodes, you get 3 episodes a week for only $4 a month or $40 a year. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to get access to those episodes now. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Limiter Lou.
You know, just don't run into me. I'm a brick wall, okay?
Sure. Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah. I had no idea what to come in with that one, but
I feel like this is a new tradition that we're starting, which is me saying a random nickname that we didn't think of before, thinking
and then
of
me
on the
trying
spot.
To come up with something on the spot.
Yeah, and then you responding on the spot. Anyway, this is a good clickbaity title here. Creative compression. The title is good, and we're gonna talk
run
about
with it.
We're gonna run with it. This is fun because Lou and I have been talking a lot about compression and compressors recently. I'll just start it off. I got a new one and it's a fun one. I have like 25 days left to decide if I want to keep it or return it. It's cool. It's vibey and we'll talk about it. And, we'll talk about just compression in general. Today we're talking about creative compression techniques. Obviously we could start with the low hanging fruit. Like smashing the shit out of stuff and using various different types of compressors.
Yeah.
You know,
we can also go on the side path of creatively using side chains.
There you go. Yeah. That's what I was thinking too, as well. It's like use of side chain. And maybe we can even talk about, what is that called?
Multi-chain?
Dry, wet. Parallel, we could talk about parallel compression.
Yeah, we can talk about mixed wet knob versus parallel, like New York style.
Yeah, so like a separate bus type thing. We could also talk about distortion through compression with hyper fast attack and release times. We could talk about high ratios. We could talk about hyper slow compression and what that means. And we could talk about how we like to use compressors. Analog emulations versus just digital clean compressors and how each of them are used. So these are kind of like the various topics that we might touch on. We'll see how much we could stay on topic. But first, let creative compression. Lou, I mean, compressors in general, meant to be a practical tool. Things are dynamic. Yeah. And if they're too dynamic, things will go in and out of a mix. For example, the singer in the chorus starts yelling during the loud part. That will make the vocals sit right. If you mix to the chorus, it'll make the vocals sit right. And then you get the verse that's like way quiet, right? Mm-hmm. Or like, have you ever heard of a song, maybe like classical or jazz, where all of a sudden you have to turn up the parts, turn up the radio or turn up the speakers during the quiet parts just to hear what's going on? Or like this, sometimes in a movie, movies are typically more dynamic, right? Or in a film score, turning up the parts when it's quiet, and then like all of a sudden there's like a big explosion. You're like, ah, and you have to turn everything down. These are real issues that come from the lack or the lots of dynamics, from a high range of dynamics. And having less dynamics or more controlled dynamics allows us to practically level out the volume and the dynamics, the amplitude of the sound, the music. And that can in turn be used to our benefit and can be used to create a vibe, etc. Let's talk about the simple thing first, Lou. Clean compression. When to use clean compression, when you like to use clean, no artifact leave-in compression versus down and dirty compression.
Ooh. If I'm just trying to go clean, I think, honestly, the best thing you could do is just go for something as simple as C2 from FabFilter. And it's usually used like as like one of the first compressors I'll use. Something that's just really just trying to taper out any kind of like high peaks. And trying to like, if I'm, let's say I'm compressing a snare, a snare that's very transient. The drummer doesn't always hit in the same spot. So sometimes it has more of a thumpy pop to it versus like a side stick kind of fast transient kind of pop to it. I might go with something cleaner just so that I'm not constantly shifting the tone of the compression on it. Some compressors can get a little bit, a little more dirty the more they drive. So using something like a cleaner compressor first and then using another one to actually drive up the tone and get a little more squeeze out of it, a little more sustain out of it, might be my first approach. So going with clean compression, I usually will use that as like the first compressor, something that's really just trying to tighten up the pocket. Because if you go with a dirtier one first, if this isn't your intended use, it could be shifting in tone the whole way through, depending how hard that snare is going into that compressor, depending how hard it's making it pump. But something like C2, I found to be like really clean. And I'll use that one for like clean parallels with vocals, because it's, I'm sure it's not the only compressor plugin that has this, but most compressor plugins have like a mix wet knob. While C2 has a dry wet option separately. And you can actually pan the two, which is pretty cool. Not sure 100% when that would be really useful, but it's a great clean compressor, and it's especially useful in those very dynamic tracks where you're just trying to keep them together before doing anything like super crazy.
Yeah, there's a typically, if I'm like,
it's funny because I don't think we would describe ourselves as very like clean tool users. I think almost everything we use has a tone.
Yeah, I enjoy smashing things. No, like, because if I'm also at the same time, like if I'm just trying to get the peaks off, you know, like some unnoticed, just get a couple dBs of headroom type stuff, I'll also just go into clipping. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on the frequency. Like if it's a kick drum, I might not use clipping, but if it's like a hi-hat or a snare where it's more like high frequency stuff, I might just go straight into clipping. Because the higher the frequencies are, if you clip, it's less notable and less noticeable. Let's see. Yeah, C2 is great. The stock, any most stock compressors are great.
Yeah.
You know, R-comp type vibes.
And you can go aggressive with it too. You can even choose a nice clean limiter for anything that's really that crazy that you don't necessarily want to use a clipper on. Like invisible limiter, I just use like very good for low end info.
Yeah, like invisible limiter, I use like FabFilter L2 or like the Waves L2, and not to like raise the gain, but just to chop off the tops just a little bit, you know, on like highly percussive transient information. On like football stuff where it's like long extended notes, I won't go to that sort of stuff. Clipping and limiting doesn't really work well. And when it comes, obviously, we should talk about for the audience here, for longer notes like ballad vocals and stuff, slow release times are better. Slow release, slow attack in general, kind of works better for like the ballady stuff. And that's where like good compressors shine. Like it's a little bit easier to compress like transient material. It's a little bit harder to properly compress.
Like slow moving information.
Yeah.
Some molasses. I mean, a good example of this would be compressing bass, because there's a lot of times where bass has long sustains.
Yeah, it depends too, because I'm also thinking of using bus compression on some sort of like film score. Mm-hmm. It's like the Very Mew, or not the Very Mew. Yeah. The Manly Very Mew is popular because it's slow, right?
Yeah.
And there's something to be said. We've done episodes about macro versus micro dynamics. And I think that this is something that's important to talk about real briefly. Macro dynamics is the dynamics between sections, like verse, chorus, bridge. And micro dynamics is like the in-the-moment transient information, like a drum bus, a snare hit, a kick drum hit. So when we talk about macro dynamics, we're talking about allowing the verse to jump into a chorus. Like when the bass drops in the chorus, there's enough of a dynamic change where you feel an elevation in attitude, energy, etc. Where micro dynamics is more about making sure every snare hit is the same, you know, so it's not one pokes out more than the other. Vocal dynamics in that moment, and less so from verse to chorus. So anyway,
yeah,
we have episodes about that in the past, but like a Very Mew, Manly Very Mew is great for like macro dynamics. And then you have an 1176, which is great for micro dynamics and less great for macro type processing. And that's like the sort of idea that we have for, and then you have saturation too. I want to talk about the thing that I'm thinking about now. Like what I want from, so I was looking at getting another compressor here, right? And I got one right now. It's a modern take on a 175B. So it's got six tubes and five transformers. It's from a company called Electric & Company from Austin, Texas, kind of like a boutique, small manufacturer. And it's the EC5B, and it's a set ratio of 12 to 1. It compresses with a tube, but it's fast, like an 1176 style attack. And it's a modern take because it has more extended attack and release times. It's got a high pass filter. You can even bypass the compressor, just run it through the tubes. It's got some attitude. And Lou, you were playing with it. It's very finicky. It's very reactive. It's not clean at all. And that sounds super fucking cool to me. And I love it. Because that's the one thing that I feel like when it comes to compression. I like compressors where they have a lot of personality and attitude. I like the ones that imprint a certain, you know, flavor or color. And I don't think that that's useful for every track, but more times than not, I would rather use something that leaves a little bit of color that I can blend in. I think El Rey from Acoustica is another great tubey one where it like dips the mids and boosts the lows kind of vibe. Something like, what else? What else? What other compressors do you like that have a lot of color?
You already
know. Any 1176.
You already know. On my shopping list is the STA level, or what I used to have, the double wides. Those things were just amazing compressors. They had a tone where you're just, oof. It's very lush vocals. Very nice rounded bass.
Yeah and it's cool too.
Like they weren't clean.
When we talk about compressors, this is important to talk about. For example, why is the CL1B so revered as a compressor? And I feel like when it comes to compression, there's two things that people look out for is one, the tone, the color, the saturation, and how things sound coming in it and out of it, as far as like EQ and tonal balance, saturation, grit, right? And then there's the other side, which is the actual compression. And those two are very separate. The CL1B has very easy to control, very usable. It's impossible to fuck it up type compression. Like,
and if
it
you
is,
do, it's very evident.
Yeah, like it's such a user-friendly compressor. Like it sounds good, it feels good, it compresses things, and it doesn't really sound like it's compressing things. But it is not known as a color box. It is, for as many tubes that it has and transformers that it has very little to no color, to the point where I find it boring. It's just too good at compressing. It's like too nice. It's too easy. Like And it's like, it's reliable. It's the good, reliable workhorse. It's the reason why we love our comp. You know, it's, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
But then you have something like the stay level.
The longest running fan favorite.
Yeah, there you go. And then you got the stay level, right? Or the STA level, whatever you call it. You have like the Manly Varimew, which imparts some color that you know about.
This like 175 B compressor.
Distressors 1176. And all of these, like even the Fairchild, the LA2A, and the various renditions, editions, and et cetera, they all sound different. And that's part of the reason why you get them. Like, yeah, sure, the CL1B has better compression than a vintage LA2A, but it, the vintage LA2A
has a vibe.
Yeah, it's got this like saturation. It's almost sounds better because it's inferior. Because the superior product is the one with less distortion, right? Like, I mean, technically speaking, every electrical engineer is just like, let's limit the amount of distortion we can get and make the cleanest product possible. That's a superior, more difficult to create product. But it's like the fact that we're like, no, we like the distortion and the saturation. It's like,
I feel like having a little bit of tone to yourself just makes it to where you actually pass the social vibe check of compressors. Like every compressor is looking at each other like, hey, what's going on? Hell yeah, you have your own unique sound. You have a unique sound. Oh, you're just clean. Passing the vibe check. I don't know. I could use a plugin for clean. Just saying.
Yeah, hold on. There's a lot of like compressor plugins that are fairly clean. And that's another thing too, is like with digital stuff, I think saturation is getting a lot better among digital. Again, like the Acoustica El Rey, it's an expensive compressor and it's not always going to be what everybody wants. But as far as like tube emulated compressors, that is like, great. I don't, have you tried it, Lou? I've talked about it a bunch. I've actually never asked you.
I bring it up all the time.
Oh, okay, cool. Shoot, yeah, that one is
I've
like.
I've used the El Rey so much that I've found uses for it in mastering.
No, yeah, I use it all the time for every situation. Dude, it is, oh man, hold on. I need to be careful with what I say. But I've had outboard gear with nice tubes that are not cheap that don't sound as good as the El Rey in digital form. Like, objectively sounds worse than the El Rey. And so that as a plugin is fantastic. I'm trying to think of like other plugins that do a really great job with that like tube sound that I have. Hold on. I need to pull it up. You know, MGUC, what is that compressor? Talking about like stay level too, the MJUC variable tube compressor from Klanghelm. Dude, it's if I remember right, it's $25 bucks.
Yeah.
That one's got the stay. It's got like a stay level. It's got a Fairchild, and it's got like something else, like a 176 or something.
Honestly,
like that.
I remember when Klanghelm like hit the, not necessarily hit the market, but when they started getting like really popular back in like, I want to say like 2010, 2011, like everybody had their planes. Everybody was raving about them, and they were free.
Oh, like, yeah, there's still
the
a lot of them
I ever
that are
paid
free.
For one of the, yeah, I think the most I ever paid for one of their plugins was like $50, and they're still killer to this day. I still use their VU meter because of how long I've been using it.
Yeah, dude, their most expensive plugin is $25, but they even have the MGAUC Junior, which is free. The Junior is free. The Senior, which has all three compressors with a couple more variations and styles. And then they also have like saturation types and level of saturated stuff. It's like a solid compressor. I think that one sounds really good. It's a little bit more on the clean side, but I mean, the saturation is variable.
Yeah.
Oh, without pulling up Pro Tools.
You know what piece of hardware needs a shout out? The 160X. Those things are not clean by any means, but they have their own sound. It's like they work for a specific sound. And those are one of those
DBX 160X.
Yeah.
The dual one, right? Like, or are you talking about the single U or the 2U one? The old 160 or like the X, right? You're talking about the X, which is the 1U.
There's the 160VU, which is the dual unit. I'm talking about the X, the black faced ones, the single space rack black faced ones.
Is that the one that Jason Joshua like has said that he likes to use on 808s because of the distortion characteristics?
Yeah, because of the way it distorts and pumps. Yeah. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, like, and what's funny is there's the 160A, 160X, and the 160XT. And the XT apparently is the one with more bite to it, which I think, yeah, the pair that I have that I bought from you years ago are the 160Xs. And I used to have a pair of XTs, but the XTs are harder to find. And because of that, it's not like they're a crazy amount more expensive. They're just a tiny bit more expensive because of scarcity. But the funny thing is they're a little dirtier. So they're once again, one of those like case use compressors. Like you can't use it on everything.
Yeah. Talking about compressors, I'm going through like my iLock list, 'cause I can't pull up Pro Tools while we're recording.
I just pulled up the UA stuff. The 175B and 176 from UA is a great tube compressor emulation.
Oh, those. Yeah. And those are cool because like on the UA versions, I did a lot of tests with those. Those kind of do like that 700 to 1K kind of boost in saturation, which is really nice. Yeah. There's like FET saturation versus tube saturation. There's like even order harmonics, tape saturation versus tube saturation, even versus odd, or sorry, odd versus even in tape to tube, pentode, triode, whatever. Super great stuff. Anyway,
you know, we talked a lot about taming, but you kind of touched on it, like enhancing through compression, not necessarily through compression itself, but rather how the compressor works. For instance, like the 160X has that nice, like, low thump that it does. It actually sounds really nice on like a kick drum or a bass, but the API 2500, something that's fairly clean, but it does really well at like really making your transients pop out a little more. Like it hugs really nicely on snares and kicks, but it's one of those where if like I'm doing a rock mix and I want it to pop a little more, you can throw it on the mix bus and make the whole mix pop a little more, or you can throw it on individual elements and it does just as well, if anything better.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Hold on. I'm trying to, here, keep talking for a second. I'm looking for one other thing here.
Sure. The Chandler Zen Limiter is another great one where it's very, very character driven. Yeah, like the Zen Limiter is not necessarily the first thing I'd reach for like a vocal, but it's something I might add to a vocal if I'm trying to get some character out of it. It has this nice aggressive tone, really puts things in front, and I really like that about it. Let me see. What else? Oh, the Chandler. I think it's called the LTD 2. Is it? Let me see. I got to look this one up. But I think it's the Chandler LTD 2 compressor. I might be wrong.
All right. By the way, I found out I was going to look for. Oh, I found what I was looking for.
But the LTD 2, that one is great for bass. It's great for vocals. It's great on a lot of things. And they're fairly cheap when it comes to outboard compression. It's only like $1,700 for the compressor. And I know that I'm saying it's just $1,700, but compared to like a Tube Tech, where this thing can give you a similar tone, where it's nice, it's clean, it doesn't overly pump or anything too easily. $1,700, that's putting you at the price point of a distressor. You've got a lot of creative options in a certain price point.
Yeah, there's a, okay, so a couple points that I want to make for people that are listening to the podcast right now. I want to talk about hardware versus software briefly. One, you don't need any hardware to make money. In fact, hardware is a reward for making money. That's how I want you to think about this. Like, hardware is a tax write-off. So you pay less to the government at the end of the year if you're in America. I don't know how taxes work outside of America, but this is a great tax write-off. It's a reward. It's not something that you get in order to make money. That is a dumb way of thinking about it. That's not how it works. Any clients that you gain because of your gear are not good clients. Those are red flag clients. You got to be careful. So don't be backwards about it. You don't need it. It's not like a gatekeeping superiority thing. If you feel like you can't do it, you can't make great records without analog gear. This is a deeper psychological issue that you need to work with and deal with. You are not limited with creativity because you don't have analog gear. You're not unable to make better music because you don't have analog gear. Those are lame excuses that don't exist. Anybody that has analog gear, they might come off as elitist, but what they're really doing is honestly, you should see it as a reflection of their insecurity. And like, if they say that you can't get sounds, like even I say this sometimes, like you can't get sounds in analog gear in digital tools, that's more of, it's two things. It's partially true, and we're going to talk about that next, but also it's more of a reflection of like gatekeeping and asserting dominance and superiority from a deep sense of inferiority. It's a psychological thing. It's not true, actually. The only thing that I will say is that there is a one thing that is kind of the general consensus, the agreed upon consensus by the majority of professionals that are doing well. And of course, we can argue with this, is that two things: analog gear, between LA-2As, between 1176s, they all sound different. Like, in order to model an 1176 Rev-A, right, you have to pick one and then model that unit. But between units, each unit sounds different. So that's one. Yep. So and that's because of inferior electrical engineering. Like, it's the circuits, the wiring, it's an inferior product, so it degrades over time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's cool. That works with the sound. We've talked about this. All right. Another thing too is that in general, with high gain reduction, so like we're talking like minus 10 dBs or more of gain reduction or high levels of saturation, the general consensus is, and this is partially because of aliasing, which we won't really, it's a whole nother bag of worms we won't really get into right now. Can of worms, not bag of worms. Sorry, DKism.
I mean, it could be a bag worth.
Yeah, a bag of worms. The general consensus is that with high gain reduction and saturation from the high gain reduction, it's a little bit more natural sounding or better in analog gear, or sounds different, works better, breaks up better. Like it degrades the audio in a more musical way. And that's the general consensus. But again, you don't need that in any sort of professional mixing.
Yeah. Like a good example of this is look at how many people went from a console to in the box. Look at some of the highest performing engineers. And some of them, you will see a console in front of them. It becomes part of the workflow, part of the sound, and it's something that they have to plan for. It's not something that you necessarily just inherently makes your work any easier. In fact, outboard gear makes your job a lot harder when it comes to recalls. Like, this, it just makes everything more of a nightmare.
But yeah,
that's why you see a lot of companies making the move to like computer controlled hardware and stuff like that. Like Crane Song had their, I think it was a compressor that was digitally controlled.
The one you tighten. Yeah, although that wasn't plug-in controlled, it was just digitally controlled. So it you can write down, instead of taking a picture of the unit, you can actually write down, because the little potentiometers or whatever.
Yeah, you can see what the, you could actually say, this was specifically this number.
Yeah, they're not potentiometers, but like.
Potentiometers. Those are, what is it?
The little dials or whatever they're called.
They're VCAs.
Encoders. Encoders. That's what it is. The encoders, DCAs, it'll tell you the exact. Digitally controlled
amplifiers.
Yeah. Anyway, the Titan had that.
Yeah, and then you have like West Audio who's doing that. You have Bettermaker who's doing that. And you're seeing more of a go for it in the high-end world than in the more of
Cranbourne did it too with the EQ, Cranbourne EQ, that saturation EQ thing.
Oh, that's right. You're right. We checked that out at NAMM, which actually, once again, you'll notice that like a lot of the companies that are really listening to the market as far as like creative tools, which is kind of the whole point of this episode, you know, creative compression. You'll notice that like a lot of the companies that are also going into like plug-in controlled units, they're talking more about how you can get the benefits of saturation of outboard if that's what you're after. But Mick, they also DSP. Acknowledge the biggest flaw in analog is how quickly you can work, and they're all trying to combat that at the same time that they're trying to create these great units. And even then, that still ends up being expensive because part of what you're manufacturing is also software. And now you need software programmers to get involved in your analog hardware, which is why you're starting to see a lot of plugin companies come out that actually offer tonal option plugins. Like, I think a good example of this is like Mixland. Like the rubber band compressor is a really nice touch. It's a dual layered compressor, all in one plugin. And it actually sounds great. You can use it for sustain. You can use it for attack. You can do it for whatever you want. But it's really nice that it's pretty flexible in how you can dial it in and shape the actual information.
Yeah, we love any sort of like, yeah, colorful compressor. Okay, two things I want to talk about real quick is first off, the Rock Rupel has a cool one. We're going to go into another side of compression, another creative use of compressors. If you haven't seen this before, Rock Rupel is a company that makes the Comp 2. I think Pulse Audio. No, not Pulse. Hold on. It's the same Process Audio makes a plugin. I actually really like the sound of this one. It's a very fast. It's known to be one of the fastest Varimu compressors. The Rock Rupel Comp 2 by Process Audio, which Lou and I have been given free licenses for. We kind of like, not necessarily sponsored, but we have been given gifted the licenses. We've used it quite a bit. I actually love this plugin. I think it sounds one of my favorite Varimu type compressors, and I love how fast it is. I love how it saturates as well. It's very useful. The graphs, just the way that it's designed. Anyway, this company, not only do they have the Comp 2 in the physical format, like it's a real compressor that they're emulating with this plugin, but they have another one here that we're going to talk about. Lou, I don't know if you saw this. I saw this at NAMM at their booth. They have the Sidechain 1 VCA compressor.
From Rock Rupel.
Look it up. Rock Rupel, yeah. So they've got fader. Not only do they have the classic compression, like threshold, speed, attack, release kind of stuff, output, they also have two faders on the left-hand side of the compressor. And the top fader is a low pass, and the bottom fader is a high pass. And you can solo the high pass and low pass, and you can single out the sidechain circuit. You could single out, for example, just the snare, so the compression is focused on only one thing. So it only compresses when the snare hits. So you can actually use sidechain significantly more creatively with these with this compressor.
And
I mean,
looks you can actually link them for stereo too. So it starts off as a mono unit, but it has a link function on it so that you can run them in stereo.
Yeah, so there's this really cool, so we could talk about like side chaining. I mean, the classic thing that's not so creative, it's just useful, is side chaining. Okay, so for anybody that's unfamiliar, I mean, forgive me if I'm repeating things that you already know, but typically speaking, a typical compression circuit, what it does is the input stage, they duplicate the signal. One goes into the sidechain detection circuit. The other one goes through the compression circuit. And the duplicated sidechain signal, some of them have like a high-pass filter where it cuts out the lows. So the compression circuit is not triggered by the kick drum and the bass. It'll still compress the kick drum and the bass, but it's not triggered by it, right? So it's literally just a detection circuit. Think about the sidechain detection circuit versus the compression circuit. And the compression circuit is not affected by the sidechain, but the sidechain detection circuit is. Anyway, not getting into that anymore. You can look at more into it if you'd like to. We can also talk about feedback versus feed forward, which I can now speak on. The cool thing with sidechaining, with classic high pass sidechaining, is that again, you don't have the kick drum, which eats a lot of headroom. There's as far as like sound goes, how sound works is low end takes up more energy and eats headroom more. So if they have a kick drum that is the same volume as a high-pitched snare, the kick drum will trigger the compressor always more than that snare drum will, even if it's at the same volume. That's just how sound works. It's not linear. So if you cut out the low end in the detection circuit, it'll still compress everything, and you can retain that low end a little bit nicer.
Yeah, Lou, there's also trying to combat in a similar sense. There's also the Pro Audio DSP's DSM compressor. I don't know if you've played with that one much, but it actually allows you to map the tonal characteristic of the source audio by having it listen into it. It creates an input threshold graph that matches the curve of that audio. And that way, when you're compressing it relative to its overall program information versus which frequency is passing the threshold first. Because it tries to move with the curve of the audio that you processed in front of it. And then you can manipulate that curve to say, be less reactive to low end or be more reactive to low end, be more reactive to the 5K range. I want you to, you know, compress more when there's actually like vocal information in the S's coming through. You know, it's one of those where like, you can use it to really destroy a mix every time like the low end hits, or you can let it completely breathe.
Yes, but, and that's really interesting too.
DSP DSM.
The cool thing about there's a, for example, a famous one that uses a couple famous compressors that have other forms of sidechain EQing going on, sidechain usage going on, is, for example, LA2As actually usually have a tilt kind of I don't know exactly what the curve is, but like a similar like tilt sort of sidechain in the detection circuit. So for example, with the knob, you can bias it so, or you can adjust it so it boosts the frequencies in the sidechain detection circuit. The top, it boosts the high end. So it's more reactive to the top end of the track that is being compressed. Again, reactive, not compressing more or less necessarily, because it still compresses. The compression circuit will still compress whatever the sidechain circuit is telling it to compress, but it still compresses everything the same in the compression circuit. Okay, another one is the API 2500, which in the thrust circuit, right? I looked this up. I read the manual for it the other day. There's normal, which the compressor, the detection sidechain circuit is seeing all of the frequencies as flat as normal, linear, like we always in any compressor. And then you have medium thrust, which it does this tilt curve. So there's like the mid range is flat, but the top end has a high shelf of a few dBs and the low end has a low cut a few dBs. So it's not necessarily a high pass. It's just there's a cut in the low end in the sidechain circuit. The mid range is flat and then you have a high shelf. And then you have the thrust, you have the high thrust or whatever it is in the API 2500, which is a linear tilt. So there is no point where there's no flat point. It's just super high boosted at 20K, super low cut. It's just a linear tilt band, which allows more low end to get through the compressor, et cetera, et cetera.
The API 2500 is also a dual design compressor. You can choose between feed forward and feed back.
Yes, and without looking it up, I'm going to try my very best to explain this.
Okay, I got you for backup if you need it.
Okay. Feedback was meant to be a practical tool, I think, introduced in the Fairchild. So the output of the compression circuit was fed into the sidechain. So in feedback mode, in order for the compressor to not kind of, with like old very mu tube compressors, it would kind of do this black hole sort of like compression thing where like it'd suck in, like if this wasn't done. So in order to prevent over compression and for this to go into the black hole of compression, as Eric Valentine calls it, the design was the compressed output of the compression circuit would feed into the sidechain circuit. So every time the output was compressed, that compressed signal is what was causing what was being read by the sidechain. Then feed forward is where the sidechain was never affected by the compression at all. So you can have more extreme forms of compression, kind of a more modern sound. Doesn't work as well for like very mu type tube, slow compressor type stuff.
Yeah,
sorry.
It was.
Is that right?
With the API, basically, with the 2500 being that it's so fast, it's kind of like it lives in this middle realm where, with feed forward design, the actual audio that's processed before it hits the compression circuit is not being fed into the sidechain. It just goes straight into compression and receives whatever the compressor does. But because of that, it's reacting significantly faster with like a little bit of distortion to the transients. So that's where you get like that transient shaping in the 2500 because it's just passing right through it. With feedback, it just like you said, it feeds back into its own sidechain, but the compression is now happening a little bit more delayed. But the audio also comes back a tiny bit more delayed. That's why with like feedback designs, they had issues with like parallel compression. So because it was tiny bit. It's like we're talking microseconds slower, but it was just a tiny bit slower so that it can compensate and the compression could sound more in time with the audio versus behind the audio because it wasn't reacting to the previous sound and then compressing down, but rather that audio was feeding back into the sidechain and then getting hit with the compressor.
And again, from what I understand, that design was invented for the Fairchild in order to make it significantly more difficult to overcompress a signal.
Yeah, and it was more musical because of it.
Yeah, in the cool thing with the, I think with the 2500 specifically, is when you're in feedback mode, you can also kind of test how much compression you want with just the output. So if you like turn up the output, it'll start compressing more because the output is what's causing the sidechain circuit. So it's like, you can see in the analog world without bypassing or like with plugins now you can do like A/B different settings, but like if you wanted to see how it would sound with more compression without changing the volume too much, you can just put in feedback mode, you can like turn up the output and it'll start compressing more, but the volume won't change too much. Some cool tricks there. Anyway, 2500 is a dope compressor. Same thing with any sort of. Okay, we got really fucking nerdy for a moment here. Hold on, let's
get back to the creative side of it.
Side chain. I mean, DSing. What DSer, Lou? What is a DSer?
Like? Yeah, so a DSer is really just a hyperfixated multiband compressor because instead of multiband, it's still uniband if you really look at it. But it only uniband. Compresses like hey, it's just like unisex. It's for everyone, okay? DSers, no judgment. But it's kind of funny because like DSers, some people will use dynamic EQs as a form of DSing. Some people will use multiband compression, but a DSer really is just a broken down multiband compressor. It just focuses on the top end primarily. You can sometimes choose where it starts and you can get as low as like 1K on some of them. But typically it controls information like around the 3K and up range. And it only really gets triggered by information there. So think about a compressor with an extremely high sidechain filter. Like, you're really only getting it to react to things like 3K and above. But that's why you see it becoming more and more popular to use multiband compressors as a form of de-essing, because you can shape it a little differently. For instance, in FabFilter Pro MB, one of my favorite uses for it is as the, I guess, the lower S's are being ducked, you can actually have it sidechain on the higher up frequency range to push the signal upward to kind of trade off the darkening of the S's going down with a little more air becoming present so that it doesn't feel like you're completely darkening the track. And that's like one example of like creatively using a de-esser. It may not specifically be a de-esser, but you're taking the point of a de-esser and the way it works, applying it to a multiband compressor and using the sidechain filters in it, and how there's a, what do they call it? I know it's not a free range, but I forget what the button you would click for, like the infinitely placed detector for a specific band is. But you can set the band to the same exact spot for all four sections if you wanted to. You can have the low end be triggered by the S's, which is why I really like the Pro MB. But I'll have the low S's triggered by themselves, and then the top end, like 10K and above, triggered by those same S's. So every time it ducks the S, it pushes a little bit of air, so it just doesn't feel so dark every time.
There you go. That's a good solution. Again, I don't want to. Yeah. I don't want to encourage overcomplicating compression.
But have fun with it.
But yeah, I think it's more of like, okay, what we're not trying to do is say that it's very complicated and you need to know what you're doing, blah, 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 blah. What we're saying is that if you want to try, there's very creative ways of using compression and sidechain with just those two things together. And it sounds fantastic. It sounds nice. And it's worth a try. It may not work at all. Like, you might find a track that, like, the method Lou was talking about right there. It may not work at all. It may be the best thing that you needed for that track. Who knows? But the more that you understand how compression works, the more free it will feel, the more creative you can get, the more solutions you can naturally solve. Because at the end of the day, dude, this is something I think about every once in a while. Like, as a mixer, I feel like we're just, I mean, this is kind of like a common consensus thing, but like, more specifically, we're professional problem solvers. And sometimes it's like, hey, man, we got this noise in the background of this cello take. Can we take it out? There's so many. You can use RX. You can use a gate, some sort of expander. There's so many different ways to solve these problems.
You can manually edit it.
Yeah, you can manually edit it out. There's so many ways to solve different problems or to enhance different things that it's more just like the creative. The way that you think about getting there is what makes your sound so unique. That's kind of the thought, right? All right, last thing, compression. Let's see here. Do we want to talk about like saturation compressing through like tape plugins, tape model plugins, or like tube model, saturation, where like saturation cuts off the top, so it kind of is it's kind of compression, but it's not compression.
We touched on it, but we didn't really talk about it. But I think a good example for right now would be like your new compressor.
Dude, is there a like truck the tone backing of the up? Hold on, is there a truck there backing up near you?
Yes, there is.
I can hear the beeping. That is insane. That's funny.
Dude, I kid you not. I put three layers of weather stripping and everything. And I chose like vinyl covered weather stripping material and everything, like, to really try it. Bro, the construction company across the street makes creating YouTube videos that much more of a challenge. Sometimes I just sit here and I'm like, la, 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 la. And then the beep happens. I'm like, fuck. Okay, now I just got to wait.
It's still going, dude. Like,
for them to stop. Yeah.
What is this truck, a stripper? Like, how long is it going to back it up, dude?
They typically don't last that long because it's a narrow street and they just have to back into their own lot.
Dude, this truck is either a terrible driver. Oh, it's gone now. And now
it's still
now
going,
I can't tell.
Actually,
it is? Okay. Dang, dude. Anyway, yes, compression can be creative. Fuck, dude. Let's see. Oh, yeah. The last thing is a general thought, you know, having restrictions, like it's easier to be creative when you have restrictions. So like the fact that this compressor that I have right now in front of me, the new one that I just bought, the fact that it's set to 12:1 and I just have to live
with it. Yeah, that's actually pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Like it's a small thing, but it's cool. So now I have to like dial it in and live with it. That's kind of cool. Or like, so some people will choose compressors while they're mixing because a lot of the times people will choose whatever compressor they're using because they know what sound that it makes in its default setting. And it's like, oh, by default, I want this mid forward sound and I don't want to adjust it too much. So then they just use that compressor. So it's like the varying compressors are used for like ease of use. That's just what it is. They all have different tones. And yes, some of them can do all of the tones, but with a lot of tweaking. And some of them just have one tone without much tweaking, and it's a good tone, right? So that's something to consider, too. I prefer having multiple tools that do one sound or one saturation or color or like compression style really well, rather than having one tool with a little bit of tweaking can do anything. That's just the way that I think, the way that I work. And some people would rather have one compressor that is infinitely tweakable and can mimic any sound. This is not the, like, what's that compressor by, P44 Pulsar modular plugins.
Yeah.
They have a compressor called the Abyss, which is fantastic, and there's so many different sounds and tones you can get out of it. It's got a 40-day free demo. It's expensive. It's $350 for a single compressor plugin. It's expensive.
Yeah,
and
but compared
it can
to
do
a
anything.
Hardware piece, yeah,
and it's dope. It's got gain reduction limit, so you can say that you only want the maximum gain reduction to be 5 dBs. You know, it's got sidechain EQ. It's got an O2 inflator, which I don't know what it does, but it seems like it sounded when I was using it, sounds like it adds a little bit more low end and top end kind of a deal. You've got saturation on the input and the output with different styles of saturation that it's variable, right? You have variable ratio, variable knee. You have not just two bands of sidechain EQ, but you also have the high-pass filter sidechain. You have clipping in it. You have a dry wet knob. It's got every possible feature that you'd ever want in a compressor. But my only complaint with it, dude, it's got like different mods that you can do. There's so many feedback versus feed forward. There's so many different variables. My only issue with a compressor like that is that it's not one of those. Like it sounds best when you tweak with it. When you tweak it, gotcha. There's so many things.
It's not one
that
of those as
change.
Soon as you throw it on.
No, it can be, but it's like there's so many things that it kind of. Like this idea, like in psychology or philosophy, there's like this idea where it's like people are happier when they have less options. Like if you have A, B, or C, it's like there's less FOMO. It's like, oh, I picked one of the three, you know, like I picked 33% chance that I like this is the best one, right? Where it's like if you have 100 different options on the menu, then you're going to have so much more fear of missing out, like so much more FOMO. Like in general, less options is a good thing, you know, to a certain degree, but it's just like this is the ultimate compressor, the one that anybody would ever want. There's no better compressor, but it for me when I was using it, it's just like like I could tweak with this all day, and the tweaking becomes fun. And as far as like mixing, like it sounds great, but as far as like mixing, I need things to get there fast, and this is just not one of those tools. It sounds absolutely unbelievable, but it's not a set and forget fast thing. And that's, you know, it's again, that's like a classic, a great example of what I'm talking about, where it's like, yeah, man, I don't want. I'd rather have multiple compressors with limited features than one compressor with unlimited features. This is a perfect example.
I'm not going to lie. Though the cheaper alternative to that same issue is still Pro C2 from FabFilter, where you could do everything. You could do advanced sidechaining if you really wanted to, but it doesn't really have a tone that really does anything for you right away. It's one of those where you really pull it up when you need to. You know,
yeah.
And I don't know. I think that's why I like plugins like the 176, the 175, El Rey is another good compressor where that that instant tone is a good example. I know one of the 1176 emulations, as soon as you pop it on, you can hear it from UA. Like there's a tone shift that happens when you make it inactive and put it back in. Like you
just
can hear
any,
the tone
like
shift
the,
right
the
away.
The Pultec, any sort of, obviously the tape, the 1176s,
the
LA2As.
Like
the
most obvious one.
That's like every single compressor from LA2A. Any sort of like hardware emulation is going to be super, like is going to be, not super, but it's going to be colored and noticeable. Just putting it in the signal path. I'm looking at the Plugin Alliance website right now as well, but go ahead.
Oh, to check out theirs. Yeah, I know that something that I do is like I hate CLA plugins. It's not that they're bad necessarily. I just hate that as soon as I throw them on, they make everything louder. I don't like that. I know it's good for marketing, but I just hate that. So every single
I don't know if it is anymore. If it is good for marketing anymore, everybody's onto them.
I'm not gonna lie. I've been to a couple like mastering websites where like the ABs are not level matched. They're just that much louder, and I'm like, well, I mean, for those that don't know, that worked, you know. But some plugin companies, I've noticed that like they'll make things a little bit louder. I'll create presets where I know that they're not doing anything. They're just on. And so I've done that with like in the tape side of things. I've created a preset for Ampex and for Studer where as soon as you pop it on, I ran it through like Pink Noise and a couple different things just to find like the perfect sweet spot where it's not boosting low end. It's not adding or cutting anything. It's just doing its tone box thing. It's almost like line in, line out. No level differences, no tonal or suspected tonal differences because of any features. It's just whatever the box sounds like. And that's kind of how I've been using some of like my compressors and some of my, I guess, harmonic tools, where it's just, I just want to be able to throw it on and hear if I like it or not.
Yeah. Okay. Just because I have the Plugin Alliance website up, some classic ones that sound great. That are easy to use. The Amic mastering compressor is really cool. It takes a little bit of tweaking, but that one's like really cool. Let's see, another standout one, the Purple Audio one that they have, the
MC77.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
That's like the color is fantastic.
Yeah.
They have like their Distressor emulation with Kive Audio. Jesse did one with Mixland that's on Plugin Alliance, the VAC Attack, which we haven't talked about, which sounds fantastic.
Oh, I did actually play with it, and it does.
It sounds really great.
Good. Yeah.
The
Lindells
see.
Are actually really nice too, like the 354, which is basically, why am I blanking on the actual model number from Neve? But it's basically a Neve console compressor emulation, and that thing is actually really nice. It's very aggressive. It sounds great on drums.
There you go. And then there's two examples.
Oh, the Magnum K has a cool sound from Mog.
Yeah, and then, hold on, a classic example of like very transparent clean compression is good because it's clean is the Vertigo VSC2, like the blue VCA compression. Yeah. Love that sound. Very hi-fi sounding compressor. And then the two among Plugin Alliance where it's not set and forget. It's kind of, the tone is very variable. It's like, I don't typically use these because it takes too long to dial in and because of the FOMO and because of like the tweakability of it, is the new Cenozoics compressor from 3Body Technology. It's got, they just added a bunch of like distortion and saturation algorithms as well, alongside the original curves of all of these units that it's emulating. Like, this is a one compressor. You have all the compressors with one plugin type thing, but because it's so tweakable, I just don't like using it. And then you have the SPL Iron, which is interesting because it's a great compressor, but again, so much tweakability. For me, it's just it's just a little bit too much tweakability that it's just like, I don't like it. I'd rather just use a Fairchild or something with like less, like a different Verimute, like even the UAD Manly, like something that I just don't have as many options that I like. If I was using hardware, maybe I like all the options, but for a plugin, it's just like, I just don't see myself using it too much.
Yeah, all right, honestly, I think one of my favorite not so set and forgets though is going to be the Shadow Hills Mastering Compressor. I do like that they give you Class A and tube version. But
that one's within my lines of okay, because you dial in like three knobs and the saturation.
Yeah, it's like you don't have to do too much, but you also don't have to go too far with it. Like as soon as you hear 1 decibel of compression, it's already doing its thing. Once you get to like 2 or 3, you're already pretty aggressive.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's it for this episode. Let's end it here because we could keep getting nerding out and talking a lot. For me, I might regret saying this, but for me, there's a reason I like compressors significantly more and saturators significantly more than EQs. I think EQs are boring compared to it. I don't know. I just think that compressors are very fun. It's also very, there's a lot of YouTube videos out there for people that are looking to hear compression. I think we've done an old episode. You can like search and find an older episode of how to hear compression. Compression is a very useful tool. It's very important. It's a necessary, practical tool, and that's how you should be thinking about it at first. But there are a lot of creative and colorful ways to use them in your mix. Okay. Don't get, I mean, you could tell by the way Lou and I talk about them. The compression as a tool is so fun, and it's so colorful. It's so dynamic, and there's so many different ways to use it. Like, you'd be wasting your life to not get into various different types of compression. But we also understand that for the beginners and intermediates, it's sometimes a little bit hard to hear it. Don't worry. Over time, you will start to be able to hear it. Okay. Just practice more. Keep using various different types of compression. At the beginning, it might be you're using this compressor on this source because a YouTuber told you that. That's fine. Or in the beginning, it might be you using presets because you don't know what the fuck you're doing. And then you start tweaking with the presets and bypassing and figure out why was this attack and release time set on this preset. This piano preset, why is the attack and release time set the way it is? You know, and bypass it, try it, experiment, figure out why the presets were made, why different YouTubers told you that. Even if the information is bad, figure out on your own why it may be bad or why it may be good. We don't know. But the point is, keep an open mind, just learn about it, just try, experiment, and you might find ways and styles of compression that you prefer, that you love, that nobody else has discovered yet, or that is very weird and unique and unconventional. People will hate you for it, but you love it because it sounds dope to you. And that is the coolest thing. You know, instead of agreeing with the majority, if you find a way to compress something that everybody else will think you're weird for, that's the type of person that I think is cool. So be weird, fuck around, find out, you know, compressors are fun. And on that note, anything that you want to leave with, Lou?
Yes, be creative as fuck with everything that you're using. It doesn't matter if it's a compressor, EQ, saturation, or anything. Everything has a tone, and sometimes you find things that make your heart sing that have nothing to do with what they were designed for. And compressors, oddly enough, continue to be one of those things.
So much fun. All right, well, on that note, happy mixing, my friends. Oh, wait, hold on, real quick. Exclusive episodes of the pod. MakesTheMusicPodcast.com/exclusive for exclusive episodes. It'll unlock all 200 plus episodes that we've done. And also leave us a 5-star rating review if you haven't already. We really appreciate those. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Thank you.
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.